They've watched Citizen Kane a combined 200 times. Elliot's first words were, "I personally thought the use of Dutch angles was derivative in the 400 blows." In Nathan's favorite historical figure is Fritz Lang. Now they're bringing that snootiness to you with Magellan's at the Movies.
Welcome back, listening audience and faithful fans of the podcast. You might be asking yourself, where on earth are the Magellans at the Movies? And we do apologize for that. We took a bit of a hiatus there. We had some, personal things that we had to attend to. But we're back. We're back like we never left, I would say. Elliot, do you have any comments on our delay here for this episode?
Like what?
I don't know. An apology? A mea culpa?
Sure. I don't know why I have to be the one to apologize, but we here at the Magellan's at the Movies Incorporated would like to extend our sincerest apologies to our fans, to our followers, to everyone who has ever enjoyed our work. We try to hold ourselves to a very high standard of customer relations, and we didn't live up to that, and we apologize, but we're back, and I would say we're back and better than ever, honestly.
I would agree 100% to that.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a noticeable upturn in the already stellar quality of our programming.
Definitely.
Nathan, do you want to talk about any of the movie news that's going on or that's transpired in the last 2 weeks, or do you just want to get into it?
I don't really have anything. I think the only thing that I would kind of comment on is the first trailer for Paul Thomas Anderson's new movie did come out a couple of days ago, I think. And I'm really interested to see how this one is. If you haven't been following this is his biggest movie to date. He got an insane amount of money to make this movie, and the rumor is it is not marketable to a general audience in the slightest, and the trailer seems to confirm this. So I think we're most likely looking at a gigantic financial bomb for, I'm pretty sure, Warner Brothers, the company who needs nothing else if not a giant financial bomb. These guys can't scramble together a decent movie to save their lives. It's crazy. But anyway, I think the trailer looks good. I don't think financial things really matter, especially in terms of art. I think the trailer looks pretty decent. I'm excited to see the movie. Otherwise, there's just a ton of stuff about David Fincher's doing a Cliff Booth movie for some reason. And yeah, we're not going to talk about all the movie news. There was a bunch of nonsense. Maybe eventually we'll get to the stuff that's most important. But Elliot, I think we should dive into this episode. The fans have been waiting.
Wait. Why is PTA's movie not marketable to a large audience?
Well, it just doesn't look like something the general public is really going to gravitate to. None of his movies have really been stuff that's like a popcorn blockbuster. The rumor on the street is that this movie is adapted or a loose adaptation of a Thomas Pynchon book. And I just read a Thomas Pynchon book, and that thing was the least marketable thing I've ever read. I also did not like it at all, so I'm not excited that he's making a movie based on another one of this guy's books. But I think in general, it just seems like it's going to be very surreal. It's going to be very weird. According to the things I've seen, none of the characters are like likable. They're all kind of bad people that you don't really want to see succeed. And I believe it cost something like $140 million, which is twice what the highest grossing PTA movie has ever made.
That's certainly aspirational.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, David Zaslav is playing 4D chess with us or something. I don't know what his end goal is, and I can't even begin to fathom what his reason for shuttering other movies and then greenlighting this was, or and giving PTA this much money. But if the movie ends up being good, I'm so happy he did. But we'll see.
All right. Well, that's it. Let's get down to business.
Yeah.
Suddenly I find myself emceeing things. We're here to talk about the 80s.
Yes, sir.
And as everyone, I know everyone, my historical context thing for the 90s was a big hit.
Yeah.
So I've done the same thing. I've actually done more. I have expanded this segment. I've written up a little report here.
Oh my gosh.
I do have to preface this by saying that this is heavily focused in Europe and America. I apologize. That's just my area of, not expertise, but my area of knowledge. So I did enlist Wikipedia to get a little bit of worldly perspective here. But anyway, so the leadership of Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher marks a shift towards more conservative social and financial policies and an end to the East-West detente of the 70s. Mikhail Gorbachev in the Soviet Union implements glasnost and perestroika, which see a loosening of Soviet control over the Eastern Bloc, prompting a spate of revolutions, establishing independence and democratic governments there. The Berlin Wall comes down in 1989, presaging German reunification in the next year. The Soviet experiment in Afghanistan ends in failure, and troops withdraw also in 1989. Argentina's attempt to take the Falklands by force is also defeated, boosting the UK's global image and leading to the downfall of the military dictatorship in Argentina. The Reagan administration sells weapons to Iran in order to fund Contras fighting Nicaragua's socialist government. I don't know why you think that's funny. I think that's a disgrace.
I read a book about the CIA, and when it got to this, I was like, that's what this thing was? That's crazy. That's like super illegal and awful.
Well, yeah, it sells it to fighting Nicaragua's socialist government in violation of a number of laws and agreements.
Yeah.
This comes to creatively be known as the Iran-Contra affair and leads to indictments of several members of the presidential cabinet, though Reagan himself suffered only a temporary drop in popularity. What a guy. The Teflon president, that's what they called him. Another notable component of the Reagan years is the intensifying war on drugs. Nancy Reagan makes it a personal cause with her Just Say No campaign. Penalties for possession, use, and distribution are hardened. Federal and local law enforcement see themselves recruited into high-profile drug busts, and the effort, which enjoys bipartisan support in the government and broad support in the population, continues to expand in scope, scale, and cost, both human and financial. Deng Xiaoping leads China through a new era of reform, modernization, and a warming of relations with both the West and their frenemies in the Soviet Union. However, protesters in Tiananmen Square demand political reform, more political reform, eliciting a violent response from the CCP in which many protesters were killed, overshadowing Deng's liberalization efforts. And now that we have mentioned it, we are no longer able to broadcast in China.
Dang it.
I know. New democratic governments are erected in multiple South American countries, including Brazil, whose military dictatorship ends in 1985.
Huge.
Fantastic.
Huge.
Philippine dictator Ferdinand Marcos' rule comes to a relatively peaceful end. The Challenger shuttle explodes, and its explosion is broadcast to classrooms around the country, and a famine in Ethiopia kills hundreds of thousands. Finally, in pop culture, a few pop culture things. The first Rubik's Cube craze of the 80s. People just really like the Rubik's Cube.
Yep.
The first episode of The Simpsons, not on the Tracy Ullman show, airs in 1989. And personal computers become commonplace thanks to rapid advancements in technology and steep drops in price points, opening the electronic world to more people than ever before. So that's kind of, obviously that's not everything. It's not even close to everything, but that's just some of the events of the 80s. And I have to say that I did think when I was watching this, watching all of these 80s movies, I did notice a prevalence of drugs, drug crime, and drug-related antagonists in the movies.
But yeah.
Everyone loved that.
I think that's a pretty good segue into my section, which is maybe a little more pertinent, but still maybe uninteresting to the vast majority of you. And that's what the movies were doing in the 80s. Like you had already mentioned, Elliot, right? Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan set a different tone for American and British, so, you know, kind of by proxy, Western culture as a whole, set a different tone from the tone that was existing in the 70s. And that was, I think, very much reflected in films, not the least of which impacted by the insane disaster of Michael Cimino's Heaven's Gate, which kind of signaled the end of directors getting an a la carte budget to make a, you know, auteur-driven masterpiece. That was kind of the end of that. The studios were back in the driver's seat. They were ready to not let people write sad endings to be edgy, and they were ready to let people write happy endings so everyone gets a happy ending. And so you see this, like, the movie business as a whole kind of got a lot more commercial and a lot less independent, a lot less indie. If you think of the movies from the 70s as being really edgy and new and independent and really driving sort of a really interesting part of the culture forward, the movies from the 80s were about corporations. They were about selling toys to children. If you think of stuff like, you know, Terminator, RoboCop, Starship Troopers, Aliens, all having toys geared at children, despite the fact that there are rated movies for ostensibly adults. Although even them, right, the way they're kind of constructed is so that you could take a kid to see them, because here in America, we've never had that much of an issue with kids seeing someone get disemboweled. But if they see a nipple, we're going to really freak out on you. So,
whoa.
Well, I'm just saying.
Controversial take.
I'm just saying this is, you know, the way the movies were kind of made. Starship Troopers is obviously kind of an exception to that rule I just said there. But I think that's Paul Verhoeven is doing something there. Let him cook. Let Paul cook there.
Please don't.
But anyway, so this kind of saw, you know, I think looking at my list of the movies that we're talking about today, I think it creates a really interesting thing that we have a lot of movies that I would say are just kind of like classic crowd-pleasing comedies, classic crowd-pleasing action movies, dramas, stuff like that. But also if you go to the foreign films were kind of going crazy during the 80s because they were less affected by some of these studio changes. And so a lot of my foreign films, I would say, are Debbie Downers of movies. They're real bummers. But most of my American movies, these are fun flicks. These are a good time. So yeah, I think without any further ado, because we've had tons of ado up to this point.
Well, I thought that was very interesting, Nathan, and I'm glad to have learned more about that.
Thank you. Well, then I'll kick it over to you, Elliot. What are the 15 or up to 15 movies that you want to have on our list?
Yes. So once again, I have failed to produce 15 movies. I'm just impossible to please. What can I say? Just impossible to please.
No, that's fine.
But I've got 13 bangers here. Do children still say bangers?
I do not know, Elliot. I am not a child.
Okay. Well, anyway, in no particular order, I have got Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, or just Raiders of the Lost Ark, as it was called when it was released. Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, The Thing, Full Metal Jacket, Airplane, I'm not going to yell it, even though it's got the exclamation point, Raising Arizona, The Naked Gun, Manhunter, The King of Comedy, Blade Runner, Videodrome, The Vanishing, and Midnight Run.
All right, well, Elliot, that's a pretty good list. Now take a listen to these. These are my...
Now try to synthesize.
I did get 15. I'm pretty sure I got 15. One, two. I got 15, yeah. The last two in were kind of a last-minute addition, but I feel good about them, so I'm keeping them in. So my first two are Raiders of the Lost Ark and The Last Crusade. Then we got Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back. Sidney Lumet's The Verdict. This is Spinal Tap. Airplane, I'm also not going to yell it. Au revoir, l'enfant, I think is how to say it with a French accent. Come and See. Grave of Fireflies. Ran. Ordinary People. Tampopo. When Harry Met Sally. The Shining. And Back to the Future.
Wow. Who would have thought it? Who would have thunk it?
Who would have thunk it? Well, Elliot, it looks to me, the way we usually do this is we move the things that we share right onto the list.
Yes.
It looks to me like we have three of those.
Oh my gosh.
So that's going to be the two Indiana Jones movies and Airplane. I think that's so funny. So, Elliot, do you... we haven't done... I guess we did a review of Dial of Destiny, which I think included some discussion of the Indiana Jones movies, but do you have anything you want to say about these two flicks, why you included them?
Nathan, what can be said about Indiana Jones that hasn't already been said by legions of fans the world over? If you didn't know, Indiana Jones is one of the most recognizable characters in all of cinematic history.
Yeah.
His silhouette, his kit. As a side note, I'm very excited to play the Indiana Jones video game when it comes to PlayStation. These movies are just pure movie perfection, right? Like they're just the adventure and the humor and the stunts and the action and the characters. There's just so much fun. I love these movies. These movies were a huge part of our childhoods. Or I won't speak for Nathan. It was a big part of my childhood. I still regularly watch them. After I moved to Kansas City, the first time I went back home for a visit to like... celebrate, we watched a movie, Mom, Dad, and I, and it was The Last Crusade, because that's just what we do at the Mogollon's household, is we watch Indiana Jones.
You could have been speaking for me that whole time, because I agree with everything you said. I also, you know, just to hear, you know, they're perfect pulpy action movies. I mean, every time I watch them, I'm like, this is such... It's so fun to watch a movie where you know where the director is coming from in terms of inspiration, and you can see all of the ways that they've improved on that inspiration to make something really special. Like, watching Indiana Jones, you know he's... Steven Spielberg is being inspired by, right, the pulp sort of radio shows of the... his childhood. He's said a couple times in interviews that James Bond is a big influence in terms of like the tone of James Bond movies and the tone of James Bond himself as a hero. And then it's just so much fun because I think Indiana Jones is, I think he's more interesting than James Bond. I think he's funnier than James Bond. He's more fun to spend time with. I love James Bond movies, but Indiana Jones is just incredible. I think a couple years ago, I think I saw that Indiana Jones was voted like the number one movie character of all time because of all of those things you mentioned. He's instantly recognizable. He is such an amazing, fun character to spend time with. And yeah, these movies are just a hoot and a half. And then Airplane.
Speaking of hoots.
Yeah, speaking of hoots, Airplane, I just think kind of in a similar vein as Napoleon Dynamite getting onto our 2000s list, Airplane is just insanely consistently funny. And it's even more impressive in Airplane's case because Airplane is like a joke a minute, if not a faster clip than that. And it is incredible to me how many of these jokes land for me, how well set up the jokes are, how much fun it just is to watch the cast do all of these bits. I regularly quote a lot of these jokes in my daily life. Like, you know, let's get some pictures, don't call me Shirley, boy, I picked a bad day to stop sniffing glue. That one doesn't really land very often with the people I'm with. But it's just an amazing, it's so funny. We watched it when I was, like, in high school. I was a bit older the first time I watched this movie, and I still find it really, really funny. So everyone's got that one movie that they're just like, every joke lands. And if you don't find it funny, you're just broken. That's me with Airplane.
I agree. I don't know if finding Airplane humorous is a good litmus test for someone's brokenness, but I think it's very funny. I would honestly credit Airplane with my abiding love for this era of comedy. Mm.
Well, the happy feelings are done from this point. So, Elliot, I think usually we go through these and we just talk about why we think they deserve to be on the list. I have one more than you, so I'm going to start with my first one. I don't have to talk about this very long because it's another one that has been talked to death. That's going to be Star Wars Empire Strikes Back. This is... I probably have mentioned this a couple times in our review of A New Hope and in our kind of overview of the Star Wars universe. I would consider Empire Strikes Back in a very similar vein to Raiders and The Last Crusade in terms of just an impeccably put together action adventure movie. It's just so fun to see all of the influences and all of the things that George Lucas is trying to bring to the screen. It's really fun to see those brought to the screen by an actually talented, competent director. No offense to George Lucas, he made American Graffiti, but Irvin Kershner really put together a heck of a movie. It looks fantastic. It has so many iconic moments and pieces of set design and score and characters, and it is just... everything you could want from a Star Wars movie times 10. If you enjoyed the first one and you were like, dang, I wish I could spend some more time with those characters. Hey, good news, buddy. There's at least one more movie that's really fantastic that has all those characters in it. And then there's a lot of other movies of varying quality that have these characters in it. But Empire Strikes Back is, in my mind, a perfect film and a perfect vision of what action adventure pushing the envelope technologically, filmmaking can look like.
Okie dokie. My first one, I guess, is The Thing, and I don't need to talk about that because we've done a review on it. So go ahead and listen to that review if you want the whole story. But basically, I think that The Thing is probably my favorite horror movie ever made. The special effects, the way that it's structured in such a way that there's no safe space. There's never a relenting in the tension. I think that this is Carpenter's best work. I got it for my birthday. I got it on Blu-ray.
Wow.
So I'm looking forward to rewatching it and seeing all of the weird creatures in high resolution. But yeah, nice. The Thing. There it is.
My next one is Sidney Lumet's The Verdict. I think this was one of my favorite movies the second year, or maybe the first year, that we did a year recap. And I just think the biggest thing for this movie in my mind is Paul Newman with just an incredible performance. I love his character in this movie, and I think it is just, it's a fascinating film about someone trying to almost relearn how to do the right thing and relearning the complexities of the world. I mentioned before that, you know, the 80s were not a great time for downers of endings or very complicated sort of movies. And I think The Verdict is the exception that proves the rule in some ways to that thing. It's a really interesting movie, but the biggest thing for me is Paul Newman is just going crazy in this film, acting-wise, and he's not being given any help from the cinematography. The cinematography is really interesting because there's very few close-ups, there's very few moments where it's really giving him, like, hey, just act your butt off here on this easy shot. It's all physical acting. It's all acting with his body. It's so amazing to me. So that's why I think it should be on here.
Alrighty. Next up for me, I've got Full Metal Jacket, which I believe I've talked about before on the program.
Yeah.
But just to give you a recap, in my view, Full Metal Jacket is it's a movie of two distinct halves. One is about the ways in which war dehumanizes and abolishes independent thought and humanity from people. And then the second half is, what does that look like in action? So I have always been very impressed with the movie's dual nature, as well as the incredible performances by Vincent D'Onofrio, what the heck, I can never remember. You know who I'm talking about, though.
Yeah.
Arlie Ermey as the drill sergeant. Stanley Kubrick's, what do you need me to say about Stanley Kubrick? If you need me to tell you that Stanley Kubrick is a good director, I don't know. Welcome to your first movie. Yeah, I think this movie's fantastic, and I think it absolutely deserves a place on the list. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it on my list. That's how this works.
Yeah. The next one for me is This is Spinal Tap. This is kind of the other side of the comedy coin to Airplane. That Airplane is a movie filled with jokes where you're constantly looking for your next reason to laugh. This is Spinal Tap is a mockumentary where you are constantly questioning whether or not you're supposed to laugh at this. And I love those sorts of comedies. If you think of something like Nathan For You, I would say This is Spinal Tap is in a very similar vein where it's just weird. Everything is slightly off and you can't ever tell if there's a joke here or if this is just people being people. And I think there's also a really neat narrative arc that the movie manages to weave its way through, despite, again, the mockumentary setup. And this is a really early mockumentary sort of film, which I always find interesting. So I think it's just a really interesting movie, and it's got a lot of great comedic moments, as well as it bizarrely spawned its own rock band out of the fake rock band that the movie centers around, which I just think is the silliest thing. But This is Spinal Tap is my next one.
Alrighty then. Next up for me, I've got The Naked Gun. Wait, no. Raising Arizona. Talk about The Naked Gun in a minute. Next up for me is Raising Arizona. If you look at the blog, which of course everyone does, you'll know that when I ranked the Coen Brothers movies, this was my favorite of their straight-up comedies, and I stand by that. I think that this is a amazing kind of almost screwball comedy. It's got that wonderful, the indescribable Coen's quirk to the characters that can get out of control, but in this case is perfectly apportioned, I would say. It's just really funny. There's not a whole lot else to say. And also Nicolas Cage, I think he's great in this movie. It's good. I like it.
Yeah. My next one is Au Revoir L'Enfant. I should start introducing some of these if you're not familiar with them. If you're not familiar, this follows a young French boy as he goes to his private school during the German occupation of France. And I would say if you've seen something like The Holdovers, I would consider this to be very similar to that sort of vein. It is an incredible story. It's based on the like real story of the director's experience in school. I believe the climax of the movie did genuinely happen to the director. And it's a very powerful story. And I think besides it being a very powerful story, it's a really interesting glimpse into how children and how we as like people try to like build a moral framework in a universe that this character, the kid, is trying to grapple with the questions that the world is starting to present him with, that anti-Semitism is obviously rampant. And so he's starting to ask questions about things like, why would I hate someone just because of their national lineage or just because of where they come from and the religion that they have? And I think the way the movie explores these issues in a non-simplistic sort of way is really interesting. And the climax is just a brutal, I don't want to spoil too much, but it's a fantastic climax. I think it's an amazing ending, and I think it's a really incredible film.
All right. Well, spoilers. I already spoiled it for myself. The Naked Gun's next up for me. Another comedy. And another great comedy. This is basically Airplane on the ground. It's the exact same style of humor. It's even got Leslie Nielsen in the starring role, who, of course, is in Airplane and is a legendary comedic actor.
Yeah.
Yeah, this movie's, again, it's just really funny, man. I just find it really, really funny. And it's another example of this old style of dry, very fast-paced, often deadpan humor that I really enjoy. And I really enjoy it here.
Yeah. Well, we're gonna keep coming back to depressing Nathan and his foreign films about children in World War II having a tough time. Because my next movie is Come and See, which follows a Russian, again, child as he kind of gets conscripted into the Russian fighting forces on the Eastern Front during World War II. And it's another movie that I think is fascinating because it puts us in the eyes of someone who doesn't have a full picture of the world yet, trying to, again, grapple with things that I would say most children shouldn't have to grapple with, that he's seeing atrocities being committed against his people. He's seeing atrocities being committed by his people towards other people, and he's trying to grapple with the morality of these things, as well as just like the fundamental question of why is this happening, and why is this happening to me, and the loss of family members, the loss of people close to him. It is a brutal movie. It has one of my favorite just like pure emotional moments maybe in any movie ever. I think one of the reasons why this movie has stuck with me as much is because it just has one moment where I'm like, dang, I feel that, like I really connect with that sort of emotion. But yeah, again, kind of like Au Revoir, it's just a really powerful story, and it doesn't stop at just being powerful. It is also interested in what makes this story interesting, which I think is amazing.
All right. Next up for me, I've got Manhunter. This is another one that I don't need to go too much into because we've already done a review for it. So again, you're welcome to check that out for the full story. But basically, this is, I think you're right, we should probably introduce these a little bit more. It's an adaptation of Red Dragon, which is the first book in Thomas Harris's Hannibal Lecter series. And I just really enjoyed this. I think it's very different stylistically from Silence of the Lambs. It's moodier. It's a little bit more abstract, I would say. But in my opinion, almost as good. Another great... I think the log line for this movie is that it's great it's almost as great as Silence of the Lambs, just for different reasons.
Yeah.
Like Brian Cox's performance as Hannibal Lecter is great in a different way that Anthony Hopkins' performance is. Same with the tension and the crime drama of it. This is more of a procedural, which I really enjoy. I really like seeing the nitty-gritty of how things get done. I like mechanics in movies. So, yeah, great stuff.
Yeah. We're back to me. And I realized after I had put together my list that I had three movies that are not the exact same story, but very, very similar sort of stories and styles. So my next movie is Grave of Fireflies, which follows two Japanese children during World War II as the American bombing of kind of mainland Japan was taking place. I don't think this movie takes place on mainland Japan. I'm pretty sure it's like an outlying island, but the movie just follows these two children as they try to again survive and eke out a living in a world where they're presented with more complex questions than a child should have to deal with. And again, much like Come and See and Au Revoir, it is a fascinating story, a powerful story, but it is also about childhood innocence. It's about finding beauty in difficult things and difficult spaces. And I think it is, yeah, just a really amazing movie, as well as being animated makes it have a very different flavor from Come and See, which is very gritty and realistic. Grave of Fireflies is a bit more, I don't know if I would call it whimsical, but it has a bit more sense of, yeah, the childlike wonder, I suppose, which is an interesting way to look at an event as horrific as World War II. So that's my next one.
All right. Next up for me, I've got The King of Comedy. This is another one that I've talked about before, but basically this is, let's be charitable and say, one of the principal inspirations for Todd Phillips' Joker movie. It's about a man suffering from some kind of mental disorder. It's unclear what, but he has a maladjusted or some kind of an unhealthy relationship with this late night talk show host.
Yeah.
So it follows his obsession with this guy, which leads him to take some drastic steps in order to get closer to this person and also present himself to the world and get himself out there and do the things that he wants to do. This is a incredible performance from Robert De Niro in the main role. A really interesting movie about these kinds of relationships. I feel like this movie has aged really well in terms of what we've seen in the past, just in the past like decade, of what I would characterize as unhealthy segments of fandom, of super fans, building your life around someone else, around something that is fictional, that's not real. And this movie just takes that in really interesting directions. And of course, the climax, Robert De Niro's speech, opening speech on the talk show, is, I would say, one of the best moments in movies, period. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Back to Nathan's depressing run of foreign films. I'm going to do Akira Kurosawa's Ran for my next one. This is an adaptation of King Lear, which follows an aging king who decides to divvy up his remaining land, the land that he's conquered pretty much, to his three surviving sons, and it goes poorly for him. If you've ever read a Shakespeare play, things like Power and The Desire for More turn out poorly for the people who pursue those things. And I think it's fantastic. It was, I think, Akira Kurosawa's first or second color film, so it's insane that it looks as amazing as it does. there's sequences near the end of this movie that feel that like the characters are saying, and it visually looks like the characters are like trapped in a godless hell where there's no hope for salvation. And that's what the movie communicates, that we're all kind of, we've created a space that is not conducive to peace, is not conducive to joy, and we are now reaping the consequences of creating that space. All of these characters took part in hurting other characters, and now the cows have come home to roost, or however that saying goes. I don't think it's cows because they don't roost, but it's a very powerful movie. I think it's an incredibly compelling movie, and Akira Kurosawa is just like the most talented director maybe of all time. I think there's an argument to be made, and this is one of his greatest movies, so that's why it's here.
All right. My next movie is Blade Runner. Again, this is one that I feel like needs very little introduction. This is an adaptation of a Philip K. Dick story about a man who hunts down replicants, a Blade Runner. Hunts down replicants, which is synthetic humans. This movie is legendary, both for the amount of cuts that it has swirling around out there. Ridley Scott just can't leave well enough alone. And for being good, which it is. And honestly, this is a movie that I didn't appreciate really at first. And I after seeing Blade Runner 2049, I kind of dismissed it as the inferior version, which it is. I'm sorry, but we all know it's true. Blade Runner 2049 is better. But Blade Runner is still fantastic. It still has that great moody cyberpunk feeling to it. It's still got the interesting ideas about humanity, reality, perception, that kind of thing. And it still has the great performances, especially from Rutger Hauer, who provides a really great, really interesting antagonist whose name I've literally just forgotten. It's just flown out of my mind. Roy, isn't that it?
Yeah.
Roy. Love Roy. And I love this movie.
Yeah, I'm finally back to America, but still kind of depressing movies. I've got Ordinary People. This is a Best Picture winner. It actually beat Raging Bull. I guess we were talking about Raging Bull before we started recording, but it's one of the most famous Oscar upsets. Most people consider Raging Bull better than Ordinary People. A lot of people think Ordinary People just won because of Kramer versus Kramer, which had won 2 years prior. But I think Ordinary People is amazing. It follows a family who are kind of rebuilding themselves somewhat following the tragic death of one of their sons and then the attempted suicide of their other son. And I just think it's an incredible movie. I think it's a movie that's aged phenomenally. I was really stunned the first time I watched this to see how well so many of these themes of, you know, depression and mental illness were brought to the screen, like, in the 80s, which is not a time that I think of as being particularly hip to a lot of these ideas or aware of the complexities that existed sort of in these things. And it's just a fantastic movie. I was really blown away rewatching it for this episode just by how much humanity the movie lets all of the characters have, that all of the three main ordinary people in the family unit have so many different flaws and so many different things that they're going through, and it's just heartbreaking to watch them all try to piece themselves back together while hurting each other because they just don't know how to communicate or put together something well enough that they can, you know, let the other people in. And I think it's really amazing. I swear the rest of the ones that I have on here are upbeat sort of movies. This is the last bummer that I have on my list.
All right, well, we'll see about that. But before that, we have to talk about Videodrome. This is probably the one that I'm most excited about. I think that it should be clear at this point that we do some homework when we do these lists. We don't come out here with a list of 15 movies that we've already seen because, frankly, we just hold ourselves to a higher standard than that. I'm making this so unnecessarily complicated. We watch movies to find more options.
Yeah.
And this is the one, this is probably the one that I most liked of the movies that I watched specifically for this list. This is a movie by David Cronenberg, who I gotta say, I think that in the past I've actually expressed doubt about Cronenberg, but having now watched a fair chunk of his filmography for these lists, this guy's actually pretty good. You may not know it, but this guy's actually a pretty good director. This is about a man who discovers a strange broadcast called Videodrome, wherein it's just like a plotless movie about, it's basically an exploitation movie that may be snuff films. And it's about his investigation into that, uncovering this conspiracy and this subtle conflict between two opposing factions, both of them invested in media. And that's one of the most interesting things about the movie is how concerned it is with media, with the advent of mass media, that people are watching TV more than they ever have before. And I know it sounds like such a silly thing to talk about, but it really was, it was a reordering of culture in many ways, this influx, the suffusion of media into our lives. And this movie has so many interesting things to say about that, apart from just being a really interesting, well-made, tense mystery. Like, I was so drawn along by this movie, wondering what was going to happen next, trying to figure it out myself. And I'm pleased to say that David Cronenberg outsmarted me. I did not see what was going on until the very end. So yeah, I really, really liked it, and I'm excited to advocate for it.
We'll see about that.
Assuming it doesn't get vetoed.
My next movie is Tampopo. This is Japanese or Korean movie. I want to say Japanese.
I think it's Japanese.
Don't quote me on that. This is, according to the director, this is a ramen western, a bit of a play on the old spaghetti western, although this one is much more about ramen than it is about westerns. It's kind of a tongue-in-cheek western-styled movie about a celebrated ramen chef, I guess, or just like a guy who goes around and successfully cooks ramen, helping a grieving widow learn how to cook ramen. In between this main story, there's little vignettes about other people in food-related sort of hijinks and food-related sort of stories. It is probably, for my money, one of the most unique movies you could watch, just because I can't think of another film as committed to such a weird idea as food. That's a weird thing to want to make a whole movie about, but I'm really happy he did, because the movie is super fun. I love all of the little plays on classic Western tropes. I love all of the jokes that are played about etiquette, dining etiquette. I love how many times they go and visit some like master ramen person who's like, it's like a video game almost, that they go to the guy who's really good at making noodles, and they go to the guy who's really good at making broth, and it is just so much fun. It's so kooky, but it's a hoot and a half, in my opinion. And honestly, maybe it's two hoots. Oh no!
All right then.
This is also, I mean, before Elliot gets to discuss this, I do have to say Tampopo was the movie that when I rewatched it for this episode, I was like, I can almost guarantee that Elliot will not like this movie. So don't spoil your thoughts yet, but you know, you talk about your next movie. I just have to say that's my prediction.
Okay. Well, my next movie, hold on a second. I've kind of messed up my setup here. My next movie, so these last three movies are the ones that I added to the movie that I watched specifically for this list. And so this next one is The Vanishing. This is a Dutch movie about a man whose girlfriend goes missing. And then I don't want to spoil it because it goes in a lot of interesting directions. Certainly directions that I was not expecting. So it's basically about him trying to figure out what happened. And I think the mystery is really compelling. I think that the performances are great. I think that the late movie turn, where it just kind of turns into a dialogue between two characters, I thought was fantastic. And it's got a real... the ending is very impactful. And famously so. So you might even already know what I'm talking about. But if you don't spoil it for yourself. Get out there and watch this movie and come to your own conclusions. My conclusion is that I think that this movie deserves a spot on our list.
All right. My next movie is When Harry Met Sally. I don't know how much introduction you need for this. I'd say it's one of the most famous rom-coms of all time. But for my money, this is the rom-com of all time. This is the most realistic romance. It is the most romantic romance. It has so many amazing lines. It is super funny. I watched this with my dad a couple of years ago, and I found myself at the beginning of almost every scene telling him, like, oh, you gotta pay attention. This scene is really good, because every scene in this movie is really good. I love Billy Crystal and Meg Ryan in the main two roles. They are incredible. The side characters are really funny. And this is just like a fantastic rom-com that is just immaculately put together.
Alrighty then. So last movie for me here, that's going to be Midnight Run. This is a movie that I watched last week. But I just fell in love with it. This is a kind of a buddy comedy movie, and I love movies about friends. This is another thing that I think I've talked about before. I just like friendships, man. Maybe because I have none. I'm kidding. It's not true. I hope it's not true. Anyway, it's just, I would say that this is in the same category as, like, your Indiana Joneses, in that it's just fun. It's just so much fun. I found it really funny. I found the central relationship. So it's about a former cop who is hired to escort a guy who is wanted by a bunch of different people for his knowledge of this mob figure and for having embezzled a bunch of money from this mob guy and given it to charity. So he's wanted by law enforcement. He's wanted by the mob, obviously. And it's about them navigating a bunch of different situations. I thought this movie was surprisingly clever in the different ways that they managed to get out of things, managed to get themselves out of adverse situations. And it's just really funny and really endearing to watch the two main characters. Robert De Niro, once again, in the main role. It's really endearing to watch him and his hostage become the best of friends.
Yeah. My last two are pretty easy to do because we've done reviews on them. You can go check them out, and that's The Shining and Back to the Future. The Shining, Stanley Kubrick, is, again, there's an argument to be made, one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. This is his take on the horror genre, and he does an incredible job. Back to the Future, I think I mentioned in our review, I was really impressed with just how much fun I had with it and just how well put together it is. I think it's really easy to, I had this whole rant in my head about the John Mulaney bit about this movie and being like, hey, look, you know, every movie's a little weird and real life is a little weird sometimes. So let's not tie ourselves into knots thinking about, oh, isn't this story kind of funky? Dude, watch him skateboard across the square and then the guy falls into the thing and they say the classic line. The movie's great, okay? Let's not tie ourselves into knots overthinking things.
What are you talking about?
I don't know. It made sense to me. I just think some people get down on Back to the Future because it's kind of a funky premise, and I think they should not do that. Because I think the movie's just a ton of fun. But anyway, those are my 15 films that I think should be on this list. Elliot, those are your 13. We need 7 more to be added to our top 10 list. And so we're going to start with vetoes. Elliot, you go first. What movies do not have a prayer of getting on this list?
Nathan, Tampopo does not have a prayer of getting on this list. Let me put it like this. So this movie ends with a long zoom in on a woman breastfeeding. And I think if I were tasked with making a parody of self-important, nonsensical, stakes-free movies that are basically just essay fodder for film students, and someone said, why don't we make The Last Shot an extreme close-up of a woman breastfeeding? I would be like, you're a genius. That's perfect. Someone give that man a raise. This movie's just absurd. And the truly tragic thing is that I actually didn't dislike the A plot. I just didn't like unnecessary plots B through X. I thought this movie was an absolute farce, and I really disliked it. And it is. It will never see the Magellan's at the Movies top 10 list.
It's so funny how many of the things that you say, I'm like, that's true. It is absurd. It is a farce. That is qualities that the movie has. That's so true. It's so great. Some people don't like having fun, I guess. That's fine. Anyway, what else, Elliot? What else?
Okay, hold on a second. I got to get my list back up here. It's too stupid to explain, but I've messed up my setup here.
Oh, no.
Next, I'm gonna have to veto Come and See.
Dang.
And I actually rewatched that movie for this list. And I just feel like it's the worst version of The Zone of Interest. That they're both trying to kind of be very delicate and very, I don't know, circuitous in their handling of very grim material. And I felt very much the same way that I felt when I first watched Come and See, that this movie is very laborious in its construction. It feels belabored in a way that Zone of Interest doesn't. There comes a point in Come and See where I was like, this movie has kind of run out of things to say, and then it just keeps on going. So that's what I think. But yeah, it's unfortunate. I agree, but it had to be done. It did have to be done. If it wasn't done, terrible things would have happened.
Okay.
Sorry.
Keep it rolling here.
I'm going to veto. I'm going to have to veto The Shining.
No.
If you listen to our review of that movie, I kind of become steadily more and more disenchanted with it. I start the movie thinking that I really like it and then go through a period of disillusionment. I think that The Shining, it's similar to The Thing in that it's trying to construct a movie where you're never safe. I just think that it doesn't quite do it as well as The Thing does it. And yeah, Nathan, this was the hardest. These were the hardest vetoes to come up with. Mm. Like aside from Tampopo, which was very easy to do, Come and See and The Shining were difficult to select. But so don't take that, audience, as me saying that these movies are bad, except for Tampopo, which is bad. These movies are just, in my opinion, not quite up to the same snuff as the rest of them. So those are my vetoes.
Okay, well, I'm really glad you only did three, because I was going to kind of struggle to think of a fourth to veto for yours. The first one I'm going to do is, I'm going to have to veto the Naked Gun. I just,
okay.
I have seen my cross country coach would show this movie before, like, in the period after school, but before practice, he would always be running the Naked Gun for some reason. So I had seen most of this movie in bits and pieces since I was in high school, and watching it all the way through, it's just like not as good as Airplane. I just think some of the jokes don't land for me. I think the movie feels like it has too much plot for how much nonsense takes place in it compared to Airplane, which I think has a really great balance of plot versus like meaningless hijinks. And yeah, it also has OJ Simpson in it. I'm not out here trying to support alleged murderers. It also has, did you know this it doesn't have anything to do with anything, but the love interest in this movie is played by Priscilla Presley.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Like, as in the Priscilla that married Elvis.
I figured.
Also, did you see the trailer for the new Naked Gun movie that's coming out this year?
No, that's a thing?
Yeah, Liam Neeson plays Frank Drummond.
Okay, then. Interesting pick.
The trailer's pretty good. It's got a pretty funny joke about all of the characters who are playing the new versions are, like, talking to pictures of the old version of them. And then the guy who's playing the new version of O.J. Simpson just gives a look to the camera like, nah, I'm going to pass on this. It's pretty funny. Anyway, the next movie I'm going to veto is The King of Comedy.
Oh, man.
I know. And look, I'll say this. Your description of it did a very good job of trying to win me over. But I kind of feel the same way about King of Comedy as it sounds like you feel about Come and See. That I kind of get what the movie is saying, and then the movie goes on for another hour and a half. I don't feel like The King of Comedy has enough content to really justify its runtime. I agree with you that the finale is incredible and probably worth the runtime. I was not like upset that I watched the movie because that ending is fantastic. I just think there's a lot of stuff running up to that ending that does not need to be there and does very little to increase my enjoyment of the film. And, you know, here's another one that's probably going to break your heart, Elliot. I am going to veto The Vanishing. I watched it the other day and, yeah, I think I just didn't find it as interesting as you did. I think there's pieces of it that are really interesting, and there's moments that I think are really compelling. I don't know. I feel like the ending was not as impactful to me as it was to a lot of other people, and maybe that's because I had seen too many people talking about how crazy impactful the ending was that I kind of, you know, guessed what it was gonna be. So when that happened, I was like, yeah, that checks out. As opposed to going in completely blind and being blindsided. But I feel like even if I saw it blind, I just don't feel like it's that clever. There's also a lot of moments in the movie where I can't tell if it's trying to be scary or trying to be almost like a parody of Scary Movie. There's things that happen that just feel like it's a farce or something, which just kind of made me feel confused. And not necessarily in the way the movie wanted me to. So, those are my three vetoes for this.
All right. Well, lots of stuff that we're both sorry to see go, but it's in pursuit of democracy.
Yeah.
Making this more democratic. So now we're going to take a little break. Well, it won't be a break for the audience, but for us, we're going to step away for a moment and rank these according to how strongly we feel about them. So let's go ahead and get that done.
Elliot, I feel like a lot of the times I go first on this one, but I'll let you go first. What's your number one movie? What's the movie you most want to get one of these seven spots?
That was easy, gotta be honest, to pick. that's going to be the thing. I just think that the thing, are we supposed, what do we usually do? Do we usually like talk about it some more?
No, this is usually the time when the other person talks about
it. Oh, yes, yes. You're right. Okay. So yeah, go ahead and talk about it.
Yeah, I have this at 7, so I'm happy to put this in a maybe sort of column. I'll be honest, this had a very strong chance of making my list. I was kind of between The Thing and The Shining for my 80s horror classic. And I picked The Shining because personally I think The Shining is better put together as a film. It looks better in my opinion. But I think both, I would agree with your sentiment that they're both trying to do something where you feel unsafe. And at no moment in the movie are they letting you feel like you can take a breath, like you can calm down, which I think is amazing construction-wise. So I'm happy to put it in a maybe, and if we get down to needing two more movies or something, it can definitely, it could definitely make it in, for sure.
All right, The Thing goes into maybe.
Shouldn't be a surprise. I don't think it should be a surprise, but my number one movie is Empire Strikes Back.
Nathan, today is your day. This is number 3 for me.
So let's go!
I'm okay with putting this into the yes column. I rewatched this movie for this list, and I think I have to do more rewatching and stuff, but I think I might be coming into the Empire as the best. Usually I think that New Hope is my favorite Star Wars movie, but it might just be Empire Strikes Back is coming up on the outside.
Let's go.
I'll put it in the yes.
Dude, that's the right way to feel. Empire Strikes Back. It might be the basic pick. You're not going to shock anyone by picking Empire Strikes Back as the best. It's the basic pick because it's correct. It's the objectively correct pick for best Star Wars movie, in my
opinion. Nathan, you are in danger of invalidating this pick.
Anyway.
Number 2 for me, that's going to be Videodrome.
Oh, interesting.
I really liked Videodrome.
I have Videodrome at 9, and this is a movie that I agree with a lot of the things that you're saying. I just think a lot of the movie is really weird. And I know it's a Cronenberg movie. But I just think that, you know, some of the weirdness doesn't feel like it fits into the story. So I'm willing to be won over on this one, but I don't know if I can let it onto the list right away.
All right, you can put it on maybe. I just want to say that it's insane to like the weirdness of Tampopo and not the weirdness of Videodrome.
I just feel like, you know, the weirdness of Videodrome kind of hinders my appreciation of what the movie is trying to say, and the weirdness of Tampopo is like because it's a comedy, it's supposed to be weird. I thought when I saw that you had Videodrome on this, did you ever end up watching Possession?
No, I thought about it. I read about it and I was like, oh man, I'm not sure I want to see that.
If you would put Possession on here, I think that would have had a decent chance of, like, I could have been won over to putting that on here. Because I think that is a, it's another movie that's very weird, but I feel like the weirdness complements the themes of the movie. I don't know. But anyway, my second one, and here's, you know, now the shoe's going to be on the other foot, I would imagine. My second favorite one on here is When Harry Met Sally.
That's number 8 for me.
Yeah.
So I would say we could put that in the maybe. I enjoy When Harry Met Sally. I think that it always had an uphill battle with me because I'm just not that into rom-coms.
Yeah.
And I'm always, or I'm very often, disappointed with the, what feels to me like the lack of depth to the central relationship. I think that that's less of a problem in When Harry Met Sally, but it still is present. I really enjoy Carrie Fisher in that movie. I like all the performances, to be honest. And I think that there's a lot... I think that it succeeds most as a comedy, but the romance is a little questionable. But we can put it... We can make it a maybe.
Dang, we're ending up with a lot of stuff in maybes.
We may have to re-rank our maybes.
All right, well, Elliot, what's your number three?
Number three is still Empire Strikes Back. Oh, so yeah, my number four is Full Metal Jacket.
Hey, that's crazy. That's my number four.
Wow. Let's. You can talk about it if you want.
I agree with a lot of your assessment. I think your appraisal of the dual nature of the movie has really won me over since I first heard you say it. The movie is really fantastic. I think it's easy to maybe. I personally go for Paths of Glory a bit more as Stanley Kubrick's anti-war masterpiece, or the movie that I like a bit more from him. But I think that everything you said about this movie is true. And again, Stanley Kubrick is one of the greatest to ever do it. This movie is, really fascinating and has some of the best performances in a Kubrick film, so I'm more than happy to put it on the list.
All right. Full Metal Jacket goes on the list. That leaves us with five more spots.
Still quite a few. My number three is Blade Runner.
Oh. Wow. You've got Blade Runner higher than me.
Well, I think every time I'm reminded of Blade Runner, I like it more. And yeah, it's another movie, maybe in the same vein as Full Metal Jacket, that just because someone did kind of a better version of this, because I would agree with you, Blade Runner 2049 clears this by a lot. But that's just because Blade Runner 2049 is like a generational masterpiece of a film. It's not because Blade Runner isn't good. As well as Blade Runner looks almost as good as Blade Runner 2049, and it came out 40-some years beforehand. That's great. That's insane. That's an incredible achievement. And yeah, the movie is amazing. It's got a much less likable central character, but I think that's good for the kind of story it tells. And it's really good. Where do you have Blade Runner? I guess I'm talking about it. What's...
I have it at number 10.
Holy cow. All right, we can put it in the maybes then, I guess.
Well, it's not that like I said, this was a hard list. There's just other stuff that I feel more strongly about, but let's put it on the rapidly inflating maybe list.
Oh no. Oh god.
So that brings us to number 5, right? Or for me, number 5. Yeah. That's going to be Grave of Fireflies.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I really like this movie. The central characters are, they're fantastic. I think a really good example of how to write children so that they're not precocious. They still feel like children, but they're still dramatic, well-rounded characters. It's just a beautiful but painful movie. Where is that for you?
Grave of Fireflies is a little lower for me, but it's also at 10 for me. That's crazy that we did this.
Well, do you want to put it on the maybe column?
Well, let's just put Blade Runner and Grave of Fireflies on. Like, if we flip them, let's just do that. That's what I think is fair.
All right.
Good deal, good deal, good deal.
Brings us to 7. So we have three spots. I tried to say slots and spots at the same time. 3 slots left.
We're so close. I'm next. My next one is going to be Ran from Akira Kurosawa.
That's number 13 for me.
Oh, no.
I thought this movie was okay. I really liked the guy who played not King Lear, and Saburo, but just too much of this movie, too much of this movie by far is spent just messing around in the wilderness, achieving nothing. So,
that's so false.
That's so true. I think that that's a disparity that we might have to put that in no.
We can cut it.
All right. Ran dies, but dies a noble death.
That's okay. I'll get a Kurosawa on one of these.
We just have to hit the one that I really like. I guess I won't spoil what it is. Anyway, next six for me, that's going to be Midnight Run.
Midnight Run is at the absolute bottom of my list.
Holy cow. Okay. So that's a definite no, but go ahead and explain yourself.
I think it's good. I don't know. It's not a terrible movie. I didn't veto it because I don't have like major issues with it, but I just don't. I think it's too long for a comedy of this sort. I think it has attempts to try to be very emotional, but it really just has the one attempt, and then it kind of feels like it drops that completely away. It feels a lot like kind of like Crimson Tide, where it's a movie your dad would throw on and say, like, son, this is the craziest, most amazing movie of all time, and then it's just like an okay action movie. I agree with you that it's funny. It has, I really like the buddy cop or the buddy pairing of the two main characters. I just don't think there's enough notable about it to really elevate it for me.
All right, well, that's unfortunate, but Midnight Run is a no. You're up.
Yeah, maybe these maybes are going to end up in a really big fight. my next one is Ordinary People.
This is number 9 for me.
Mm.
So, very much in the middle of the pack. I enjoyed this movie, but I would say that it had very little staying power for me. Like, here I am, having watched it last week, and I'm really struggling to think of anything to say about it. It just felt like kind of your bog standard family drama, done very well, and with a great performance by Donald Sutherland, rest in peace.
So true.
That reminds me, Val Kilmer passed away.
I know, yeah.
Rest in peace to him as well. It's ordinary.
Like the, oh, like the so people funny. It addresses. You're so funny.
We could put it in the maybe.
Gosh. All right, we'll put it in the maybe.
All right.
What's your next one?
Hold on a second, I'm writing. Next up for me, that's going to be Au Revoir Les Enfants. So that's number 7.
That's number 7 for me as well.
Oh, wow.
Right? No, 8. But basically at the same place.
I like this movie. I really liked the approach of... It's almost an example of irony in that... We, the audience, know so much more about what's happening than the characters do.
Mm.
Which, that's probably the biggest vote in this movie's favor, because I do think that it drags at places. And I honestly thought that the climax was a little bit rushed. And I felt like that sucked out a little bit of the impact. But I definitely see the quality in it. So we can put that in the maybe column.
No, okay. All right. We can't keep putting things in the maybe column. I think we just got a debate between this, because right now we have more in the maybe than we have spots left.
That's true.
And so I don't think there's really a point in continuing further down the list. If you want to hear specific thoughts about some of the rest of these, we can give really brief sort of ones. I can do that really quick for yours, I guess. Manhunter, we did a review. I don't have to add anything else to that. Raising Arizona, I would agree with you, is probably one of the Coen brothers' best straight-up comedies. The sequence in the middle of the movie where they're trying to, like, steal diapers, I remember being really great and a classic sort of, I think, screwball comedy that's a correct usage. Everyone calling Anora a screwball comedy, please watch any screwball comedies. That's not... People yelling at each other is not a screwball comedy. That has nothing to do with the genre. But Raising Arizona is, I think, a very good example of a screwball comedy. It's just not, like, incredible for me. That's the only one of yours that I have lower on the list that I haven't talked about, I think.
Okay. The Verdict, Spinal Tap, and Back to the Future constitute my bottom three.
Aw, man.
I don't know. I just thought that The Verdict was kind of boring and the moral conflict not particularly interesting. Back to the Future, we did a review on that. I enjoyed Back to the Future. I just don't enjoy it that much. And then Spinal Tap, that came very close to being vetoed.
Dang.
So, yeah.
You don't find this one goes to 11 funny?
I don't find that funny, actually. Decidedly banal.
The one scene where they're being led to the stage and they just keep going through like a maze of back rooms. That is funny stuff. That is really funny.
If you say so.
Anyway, so we have 1, 2, 3. We'll put Au Revoir in the maybe. So we have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 maybes for
three
spots.
All right, well, let's do a mini ranking of these maybes. What's number one for you?
Number one for me is going to still have to be When Harry Met Sally. I just...
Really?
Every time I watch the movie, the only moment in the film where I'm like, oh, that's like subpar, is when they close one scene with a freeze frame. And I think freeze frames are stupid. And so that's literally the only... part of the movie that I don't think it's like perfect.
Okay.
What's number one for you?
Number one is The Thing.
I'm willing to put The Thing on because, like I said, it was very close to getting onto my list. I agree with everything you said. If I can't have The Shining, I'm more than happy to put The Thing on there.
All right, I'm not going to argue. The Thing graduates. So number two for me is Videodrome, and then number three is Les Enfants.
I would put Les Enfants at two for me.
Okay, well, I would be all right with moving it to the yes column.
Let's go! This is where
right.
It becomes pivotal. The final one has to be my movie.
You know, I was thinking about making a joke like that, but I decided it would be immature. Is it Lay or Law?
I think it's L-E-S, dude. I don't know. I've been trying my darndest to pronounce it right. I can't spell it right, too. Jeepers.
Sorry. Jeez. Okay, so Ordinary People, for me, that's at the bottom.
Yeah, well...
I'm saying I think that we should remove Ordinary People.
Okay, we can do that.
All right. Well, it's down now to Videodrome and Harry Met Sally. When Harry Met Sally.
Well, this is interesting because I feel like usually our final one, we get a really easy, like, yeah, we'll go for this one. This is hard for me because I like When Harry Met Sally so much more than I like Videodrome.
I know. I'm the exact opposite.
Dang it.
I like Videodrome a lot more than I like When Harry Met Sally. I'm not sure that there's any way to solve this other than flipping a coin.
We're not going to flip a coin. We're not. Okay. We're gentlemen. We're above flipping a coin. I think
What do you propose?
Well, here's the thing. I'm a master of compromise. And in my opinion, even though I think When Harry Met Sally is way better, I think Videodrome is probably, you're going to hate this, more representative of the decade. And so for me, that means I would be more willing to put it on for that sort of reason. That I think a lot of the things that you said in your opening historical like context are present in Videodrome. When Harry Met Sally is just like really good. It's not saying anything about society. It's not emblematic of the culture. In fact, I would argue it's emblematic of the studio system, that rom-coms are probably the most studio-happy classic genre in the world, besides maybe like action movies, which were huge in the 80s. If you put Die Hard here, I could be convinced to add it on. But I feel like Videodrome is indie in a way that was really exciting in the 80s. Like I already said, movies directed by someone with a really coherent directorial vision did not get made a ton in the 80s. And so Videodrome was kind of an aberration for that reason. Videodrome is very aggressively sexual in a really gross and, like you said, exploitative sort of way that I think was not typical in the 80s. And so I'm willing to put it on there as being a bit more emblematic of the decade. Not because I think it's better.
Okay. We could put it on the yes column with that asterisk.
It doesn't have to be an asterisk. I still think it's good. I'm just saying that I don't think it's incredible. And it's not When Harry Met Sally.
It certainly is not. Well, I'm obviously not going to try to argue you out of that. So, put Videodrome right there. All right, I win. I'm kidding. This is a democratic process. No, the only winner here is fans of cinema worldwide.
So true. So, Elliot, do you care to read out our final complete Magellan's at the Movies top 10 movies from the 80s?
I absolutely do care to do that. And this is in no particular order, like with all of our lists. It is Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, Indiana Jones and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, Airplane, Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Full Metal Jacket, Blade Runner, Grave of the Fireflies, The Thing, Au Revoir, Children, and Videodrome. That is our, and here's the asterisk for you, that is our personal, subjective decision for the best movies of the 80s that we have seen.
Yeah.
Which is not everything.
Yeah.
Well, I think we can be very proud of that list. I think that there are some all-timers there.
I agree. This is, I mean, two Steven Spielberg on this one. That's kind of huge.
I absolutely think that in Empire and the Indiana Jones movies, those are like the holy trinity of classic 80s adventure action movies.
For sure, yeah. Wow. Well, good deal. Elliot, do you want to do your little sign-off here?
Nathan, life is hard and full of disappointments. You know it. I know it. We all know it.
Yeah. I'm not going to agree with that. I think there's a lot of great stuff. Speaking of great stuff, I should give a shout-out to the newest Magellan, not at the movies, but in the family, and that's going to be Betsy Mogollyines, who I married in the 2 weeks while we were prepping this episode. The delay had nothing to do with the marriage. It was only to prep for this episode. But just a quick shout out to Betsy. She's fantastic. And
yes, congratulations. Make sure that you send in emails wishing the happy
congratulations.
Couple well.
Yeah, absolutely, yes. Absolutely. Send us an email. Was there an 80s movie that we didn't talk about that you really would have loved to see on the list or really would have loved to hear us talk about? If you have a movie that you want us to review, we're going to be starting another batch of movie reviews here. We apologize again for the delay that, you know, things are outside of our control sometimes, but we're going to be back next week. I should stop saying that at the end of every episode, but I just continually am an optimist about our ability to record. So we're going to be back next week. We'll be back to reviewing movies and such. So look forward to that. Thank you so much for listening, and thank you so much for supporting the podcast. So we hope you have a great week.